could come to order. We do have a quorum. And with that, Representative Mahoney, if you'd like to go forward. In terms of the minutes from our last meeting, because we thought that was our last meeting, staff was good enough to come around with a signature page, so we do not need to approve the minutes of our April 24th meeting. We've done that through other ways. Representative Mahoney, welcome to your own committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm just happy to be out of bed.
With enough coffee, we can make laws.
No, I may be going right back. I may be waiting until about noon, and then I'm heading back home.
Oh.
I got that cold that everybody else had around here, and I'm just the worst when it comes to a cold.
You are sounding a little scratchy. And all right. Sorry to hear that. Reverend Mahoney, would you like to move House File 2362 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, House File 2362 is a bill that tells the cities that they do not have to abide by a court decision of a few months ago called Morris versus Sachs, City of Morris versus Sachs, S-A-X. That particular court case established, I'll just phrase it this way, this bill establishes a grace period for that particular court decision, and it, until May 15th, 2010, it is August 1st, 2010, which would be our normal date of laws going into effect. Because what I've been trying to do for the last 3 months is to get the sides that are at odds to agree to a compromise. There was no compromise to be had, so I've asked the Department of Labor and Industry to, with this bill, to pull together an advisory committee of all interested parties to come up with a response to the several issues that could be problematic with the Morris versus Sachs case. My concerns are that with Morris versus Sachs, there's no municipal rental code, and there's questions as to when. I live in a 1912 house. Do they have to inspect the code that it was built under, the state building code, and that didn't happen to be one? What I'm asking the department to do is clarify some of that, so that we can come back with a law that truly does clarify it and address such issues as bathroom outlets or GFIs, ventilation, stair spacing and spindles, chimney line, whether you have to line a chimney or not. And nowadays, most all chimneys are lined. Smoke detectors, CO alarms, numbers on the exterior of a building for fire code. One of the bigger ones that people have been pretty upset with, and I agree with them, is the egress window. That size, and the requirement for that size has changed 4 times over the last 30 years. So people get in and out of compliance, which is unfair to the people who own those homes, whether they're a landlord or just a single family home. There are people here that would like to testify for and against this particular bill. I don't really want to talk a whole lot, except at the end when I say it's a great bill, please vote for it. So with that, Mr. Chair, if you would call on the witnesses.
I know that the chair has a question here on, just to clarify in my mind, what it is we're covering here, what we're affecting or trying not to affect. Page 1, line 12, I see agreement regulating components or systems of any structure. Can you just help me, as somebody who doesn't have a background in the building trades, what do you mean by components and systems, and how do I think about a house in those ways?
Please. Mr. Chair, I could answer that, but I'm going to ask if Assistant Commissioner Tom Joachim could come down and maybe give us his take on that.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Mr. Joachim, welcome to the committee.
Mr.
If you could...
Committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. Your question was relating to line 1.12.
Correct. Just helping me as a novice on understanding components and systems. What is that included? What is not included in terms of how I would think about a house or an apartment building or the like?
Mr. Chair and committee members, typically in the process, the state building code, state fire code address new construction. And then once homes are or buildings are existing, then the fire code generally covers commercial buildings, and most cities adopt a property maintenance housing code to cover residential property within their facility, within their community. In those property maintenance and housing codes, they address things like GFIs in the bathroom and bath exhaust and escape windows in the bedrooms and siding and painting and height of grass and junk cars in the yard. And so what this talks about, regulating components or systems or many structures that are different from any provision of the state building code, is that taking those provisions that are in the state building code that are different within these property maintenance codes. And that's the issue that the Supreme Court decision related to, stated that our state building code is generally premised by this is the code, and homes can remain existing as they are unless they do any remodeling or changes to the facility, add on, or et cetera. So the housing property maintenance codes in some cases go back and will say, if it's, for example, it's rental property and I'm renting my house to you, I don't have a bath outlet in the bathroom, then I have to add in a GFI for safety purposes so that when people are plugging in a hairdryer, et cetera, that they're okay. Those are different than what the state building code is, because the state building code is not retroactive. They applied to those. So that's kind of the crux of this whole problem we have here. The Supreme Court decision addressed two or three of those items that City of Morris was applying retroactively, that the Supreme Court said, no, state building code says you can't do that. But then what happened with the City of Mankato, another provision came in that they started applying that they wanted to enclose the structure in 180 days, and the court ruled that that one was tied to the Supreme Court decision, which it really wasn't, but they used that as the tool of this. So what I think we're trying to accomplish here is that these things that are components of structures that are part of, are different from the state building code, can be regulated and can be addressed.
All right. Thank you for that. Do you have more testimony you wanted to provide on the bill today?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I did present a letter to Representative Mahoney, kind of addressing the language. Did the copies get sent out to the committee members yet?
I don't know.
I've got some for committee members here.
If the page could assist. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Chair, I'll just walk you through the letter as soon as you get it.
I appreciate the patience. Why don't you go ahead, Mr. Joykin. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I start out just talking about what the house file does. There's been a continuing issue. I've been in code work for 31 years, with the state for 25, and this has been an ongoing issue with us, with the housing property maintenance codes and the state building code and state fire code. And one of the main issues is the escape windows out of bedrooms. It's changed four or five times in the code. There was nothing or very little, if any, of the cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul had any type of building code prior to 1972 when we adopted the state building code. So who knows what they had for window sizes back then and what is applicable. Should there be a standard size for an existing home that was built prior to 1972? Should we, if they have a brick exterior, should we require them to cut out the brick to put in a window? What things should be done? So to me, that would be one area that we definitely could look at and finally address at this time. And then I just want to say that we are currently in the process of adopting or updating our Chapter 1300, which is our overall administrative chapter for the state building code, which we think we could add in some of these provisions, or at least look at how it would fit into that section, and then report back to the legislature and say, here's where we think we could modify Chapter 1300 to address these provisions that we think are possible conflicts of the code or that need to be addressed. And then the last paragraph just says, basically what I think all of you as members know, that the advisory committee is not, there's no per diem, there's no mileage paid, it's voluntary from the industry. And then, since we're already going to open up that section of the rule, we don't think there'd be any additional costs or minimal, if any, for us to open this rule up for the department.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Joyce. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you, sir. On the list today, I have a number of people. I'm going to ask that each of you take no more than 4 minutes, if that's possible, and try not to be redundant on previous testifiers. If somebody else said it, it's probably been covered. I have, in no particular order, Rachel Tierney from the City of St. Paul, Tom Grundhofer from the League of Minnesota Cities, Harry Reimer from the City of Minneapolis. We want to start teeing those folks up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Just to keep other people healthy, I'm going to move over there and let people take over the witness.
All right.
I'll be right here.
We'll see if the page can get you a face mask. Good morning, Ms. Tierney.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Rachel Tierney. I am an assistant city attorney for the City of St. Paul. My entire assignment is representing the Department of Safety and Inspections. The Department of Safety and Inspections does almost every kind of inspection you can do in St. Paul. Specifically, we have a program called the Fire Certificate of Occupancy Program, where we go into rental buildings, single-family home rental buildings, duplexes, every size of rental buildings and all commercial buildings to verify that they are in compliance with our property maintenance code. When Morris versus Sachs came out, the City of St. Paul was quite shocked with the breadth of the decision, which is the real issue that we're here today. The proposal by Representative Mahoney will allow us to get some time, meet with the Department of Labor and Industry, and develop some statewide regulations. As you're probably aware, since you're all familiar with St. Paul, the housing stock in St. Paul is old. The state building code, if I'm not misspeaking, if I am, someone will correct me, no doubt, was written in 1972. Almost all of our houses were built before 1972. We don't know which code applies to these houses. We may have had a city building code. We may have a copy of a city building code. But the law leaves us in limbo and leaves us in a place where we're not sure how to make sure that these buildings are safe for homeowners or in a lot of cases, more importantly, for renters. And so what we're asking is to sit down with the Department of Labor and Industry, work out what items are critical to public safety, have those regulated at a statewide level. What the state doesn't seek to regulate, like lawn length and abandoned cars and properties, will continue to regulate. But we need that time. In the meantime, we're asking for your permission to just continue what we're doing. We've had a property maintenance code in existence long before the state building code. I'm not sure when it was written. Probably, 50 years ago or more. And this property maintenance code has been allowing the city to ensure the safety of these buildings. We're just asking to continue using it until we can get this state regulation written.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Ms. Cheney. Mr. Grunhoff. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Grundhofer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for hearing us today. This is an issue that affects cities throughout the state of Minnesota who have housing maintenance code and rental housing codes in particular. It's kind of come up in a lot of areas of the state, particularly areas where you have a lot of college housing and where residential homes are being rented for college students. And a lot of those communities have wanted to make sure that those owners of structures that are renting property make sure those homes are in sort of a basic safe condition. And they've adopted these rental housing code provisions, these housing maintenance code provisions. And frankly, since last year, May 15th, I think, is when the Supreme Court case came out in Morris v. Sachs, it has left cities just in a state of limbo. They don't know what they can do in terms of regulating the safety and the maintenance of these homes. The Morris v. Sachs case left the question about how far you could go, in just a no man's land, frankly. And what we're trying to do with this legislation is kind of keep the status quo for the time period while Mr. Joachim's committee gets in place, does its work, hopefully comes up with some regulations and some recommendations that we can apply statewide. But in the meantime, we don't want to have every housing maintenance code and rental housing code provision that has been adopted by the local level be thrown out and unenforceable, pretty much for the safety and the concern of the people living in those homes and structures. So I'd stand for questions if there are any.
Questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Gunhofer. Harry Reimer is the city of Minneapolis, and continuing down the list, Ms. Murphy was good enough to just give me an extended list of wishing to testify after Mr. Reimer, Mr. Gene Ramiri, also the city of Minneapolis, Ms. Frenette from the Builders Association, Mr. Horner from the Multi-Housing Association. Mr. Reimer.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I'm Henry Reimer. I'm the Director of Inspections in Minneapolis. The most pressing impact from the Morris v. Sachs decision on Minneapolis really is the uncertainty that it creates and the broad and ill-defined preemption that they applied to municipalities' ability to enforce their housing maintenance codes. And the court recognized the problems that they were imposing on municipalities, and they invited a legislative solution to the court decision. They recognized that they were creating problems for municipalities. This is at a particularly critical juncture where cities such as Minneapolis and a lot of other places, whether they be outstate, rural, small towns, or big cities, are facing unique challenges in our history, and it's really due to the foreclosure crisis and the housing market collapse. We need to be able to enforce our housing codes so that we can save neighborhoods. We sit at a critical juncture where we can lose some neighborhoods for a generation or we can save them. The ability to enforce our codes is critical for us to be able to do that. Now, we are not seeking to conflict or to override the state building code. What we want is clarity. And relying on the building code only and not our housing maintenance codes is problematic, primarily because the building code is not a maintenance code. It is not intended to be one. It's not. The standards for applying the building code when a building was constructed versus a maintenance code that applies across the board would be very problematic. In Minneapolis, we conduct about 90,000 inspections per year. We enforce one code. If we were forced to do research and to determine what the building code was at the particular point a building was constructed, we wouldn't be doing 90,000 inspections. We would be spending more time researching than inspecting. Furthermore, most of the buildings in Minneapolis were constructed prior to the establishment of the state building code. Those were constructed under Minneapolis building codes when Minneapolis had the code and the state did not. There's one point that is worth emphasizing. Minneapolis, as well as every other municipality that has a maintenance code, has an appeal process. There's an appeal process for any order issued for a housing maintenance code, and it ends at the state. The state still maintains control over any municipality that would choose to enforce its code in an unreasonable manner. The best solution is to allow municipalities to enact housing maintenance codes and to engage in the code rulemaking process to identify where the state building code would allow local regulation and where it would not.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reimer. Just thinking as you're talking here, a lot of cities are adopting point of sale, I think what they call the ordinances. I think Minneapolis has a truth in housing. When you sell your house, it gets inspected, and would you then be required to just put those ordinances in a problem also?
Mr. Reimer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Legislator, sorry, I'm there.
Yeah. Just don't call me late for supper.
There you go.
The same with our housing maintenance code. We are not intending to apply the current building code to buildings that were constructed 50, 80, 100 years ago. What we want to do is we would enforce our local housing code, which would only touch on maintenance issues. It would not require the reconstruction of a structure based upon its condition, so long as it complied with the building code when it was built and currently complies with housing maintenance code on maintenance issues.
Representative Nelson.
Well, I'm just thinking back when I owned a home in Minneapolis and I sold it and they did the inspection. We had to put lintel blocks underneath the posts in the basement, a couple other things we had to do. Would this Saks v. Morris or Morris v. Saks put some of that stuff into... City couldn't come out and tell you to do that, or
Mr. Reimer.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
Representative Nelson, thank you. No, I don't think that it would have the impact. It's not going to change that because Minneapolis's truth in housing ordinance does not retroactively apply the building code. We only apply maintenance codes and the building code that was enforced at the time the building was constructed, unless the state building code allows us to move further out than that. So we are, in our truth in housing ordinance and in our housing maintenance code, we are compliant and consistent with the state building code. Our problem with the Morris versus Saks decision isn't that it precludes us from conflicting with the state building code, because we've always known we can't do that. It's due to the broad preemptive concept that the Supreme Court utilized in that decision. The concept of preemption does not draw a clear line for us. We do not know exactly how far we can go and where we cannot go. If it's an issue of conflict, we know that. We can read the state building code. We have lawyers that can interpret it for us, and we can avoid conflicting with it. The preemption part is the problem for us. The uncertainty is the problem for us.
Thank you. Mr. Farmer, you indicated in your testimony that Minneapolis does 90,000 code visits a year. What's the impact then if you had to go back and research what the building code was when each structure was constructed on your ability to complete your code work on a timely fashion? What's the impact on builders, developers, homeowners, landlords if you had to go back and do that research on each item?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, it would have a significant impact both on builders, property owners, and neighborhoods, because not only would our inspectors have to sift through a multitude of different standards based upon that building, that property owner would as well. The lawyers would probably do well in a situation like that. We would spend more time in hearings, more time researching in books, and so would property owners than we would spend time doing inspections or actually making repairs to properties. Our 90,000 inspections per year could easily be reduced by 80%, and that would have an impact on neighborhoods.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Reimer? Thank you very much. Mr. Lanieri, after him, Ms. Prenette, and after her, Mr. Horner. Nope. Is anyone else testifying from Minneapolis? Nope. Okay, Ms. Prenette. Followed by Mr. Horner. You've changed. Okay. Mr. Horner, welcome to the committee. After Mr. Horner, Ms. Mavenkamp from the Realtors, and then Mr. McGaughy. Mr. Horner, please state your name for the record and proceed. Welcome.
Thank you. Jack Horner, representing Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. I would like to take a few minutes to kind of go through the impact of the bill. And I agree it's the kind of a bill that may not be immediately apparent, the very serious harm that we believe is contained in it. The bill essentially says that for a period of 1 year, any local code, any local building code or maintenance code in the area of property maintenance or housing maintenance supersedes the state building code. So for a period of a year, all local codes in this area are supreme, and the state building code is not in play, is not in effect. The state building code is extremely important because it provides a ceiling. It in no way prevents, regulates, limits, maintenance. We'll talk about that for a minute. And I know there's been a great deal of confusion and, frankly, misinformation that's been presented, and we'll talk about that being the case. All it does is say that in your maintenance, in your rules, in your orders, that you can't exceed the limit of the state building code. That's all. I mean, that's what the building code provides as far as existing housing or existing property of any kind. All property owners in the state are very strongly affected by this bill. Just as a bit of background, the state building code, as you all know, is based on national standards developed by experts, developed by national and local experts. Every single provision has been supported by a detailed statement of need and reasonableness, lengthy testimony periods, lengthy opportunity for hearings. In other words, it's well documented, well shown to be the proper code, balancing, and this is very important by statute, it balances economic feasibility with safety standards. Both are important. You can't just say economics don't count, whatever we want to order is what counts. You have to balance them both, and the building code does that. The building code, and very importantly, in addition to its uniformity and understandability, which, contrary to the previous speaker, actually adds uniformity. I mean, I can't imagine that there are city building officials who aren't familiar with the building code, but aside from that, the building code adds objectivity. It adds detail. You can look at the building code and see exactly what's required. This is far different from a great many local statutes and ordinances. We'll show you some examples of that, that are very vague, that are very general, that are subject to misinterpretation, and account for the fact that it's a serious problem in some cities where you'll get orders to do work and then later on different orders to do that same work over again because the second inspector says, well, the first inspector didn't call it right. It's a serious problem if you get to only local interpretation without the objectivity of the state building code. So what this does is says for a period of 1 year, all local ordinances are of whatever sort are supreme over the state building code in areas of property maintenance and housing, regardless of whether the ordinance is reasonable or not, or whether it's decades old. The state building code, as you heard testify, is updated constantly. It's constantly in the process of being amended and readopted. Ordinances may be decades old, they may be out of date, passed with or without expert testimony, passed with or without any precision, or, I mean, we don't know. But what we do know is that this bill is saying, whatever it is, it supersedes the building code that has served us well for over three decades. You don't even know what the ordinances are, and I don't either. Nobody in this room does. You heard no list. No one said, well, here's the ordinances that we want to make supreme. We don't know. I don't know what the ordinances are in all the cities, large and small, throughout the state. But whatever they are, they would be deemed to be supreme over the state building code for a period of 1 year. There would be no appeal, and this was mentioned earlier. This would deny the right of appeal of a property owner based on the objective standards of the building code or based on the building code, because by law it would simply say that this local code is supreme. Well, you can't appeal to the building code because by law the local code is deemed to be accurate. You have in your handout material an article from the Star Tribune from a week ago, and it highlights an ongoing and serious controversy in the city of St. Paul regarding, and this is an ongoing thing, in fact there are some folks in St. Paul who are very concerned. This has been an ongoing controversy, and it says, for example, the article has allegations from a senior city building official claiming that the city is willfully violating the building code regarding egress windows and other matters. Others deny it, so it is a conflict. We do know that there have been at least 68 appeals to the state hearing officer, including an appeal from a woman, a 74-year-old woman, who has two duplexes in St. Paul, and about a year ago was ordered to replace the windows, and now again, just recently, a year later, ordered to replace them again, because the first standard was not correct, I guess, according to the second building official. The poor woman has spent $5,000 so far replacing windows. The purpose of my presenting that argument to you is not to decide who's right and who's wrong. I don't know. I don't think anyone in this room knows. But the point is that without the building code, there would be no appeal. There would be no ability to determine who's right and who's wrong, because if this bill were to be adopted, this bill says, deems as a matter of law that the local building code is correct, not the state building code. The state building code is wrong in this area for 1 year, and the local building code is automatically deemed to be correct without any evidence. Those hearings would be moot without any, we don't know what the facts are. I don't know what the facts are, but that would be the effect if this bill were to be adopted.
All right.
We have, I have, secondly, I see I'm starting to,
okay. Given the list of testifiers, we're
okay.
Trying to limit folks, so.
I've got a couple important points today,
please.
If I made that.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I won't dwell on this one, but again, you have another example in your materials. A person that I represented, a guy named Dick Ramos, who gave me permission to use his name, a few years ago in Minneapolis, he was given orders to do something that is, number one, expensive, and number two, clearly violates the state building code, to enclose the stairwells of his apartment building. Communications, phone calls, letters, and so on, but the fact is, he got a second order then from the building inspector, the fire inspector, but it's the same issue, stating you have to do this. And notice this is criminal penalties. Notice under violation of law. So we're depriving the right of appeal on a criminal matter. $1,000 over 90 days, misdemeanor, you have to enclose your stairwells. I presented to you following copies of the ordinance. I'm sorry, the state statute, as there are many statutes in this area, that directs the building code to say that you cannot require enclosing stairwells of existing two-story or less apartment buildings. This can be rather expensive, several thousand dollars, just a couple thousand bucks just for the steel fire doors. Well, the long and the short of it is we appealed. We won. You saw the copy of the letter there. There's no question that the order was contrary to the building code. It was expensive, unnecessary, unneeded work, and yet if the building code had been preempted, he would have had to do it. He would have been just simply out of luck. And this is one example of many that we could talk about. I won't go on because I've got more important points to make.
Thank you.
The bill affects all property owners in the state. It says that explicitly authorizes cities to order work that's not needed under the building code. And that's an important point. We want to exceed the building code. It authorizes work that exceeds the building code. No one cares if cities enforce what the building code is. Of course, they should. No one is opposed to maintenance or anything like that, but they specifically want to exceed the building code, making every property owner vulnerable. Rental housing, of course, and the last thing rental housing needs these days is unnecessary expenses. Homeowners trying to sell, vulnerable to regulations that exceed the building code. Rehabilitation, same thing. Several years ago, an affordable housing committee under the planning department came to the conclusion, this is people from all stripes of all sizes, came to the conclusion that wrongful enforcement of building codes is a serious problem in providing affordable housing. The state has adopted, as part of the building code, what's called the Guidelines for Rehabilitation of Existing Buildings, the GREB, or GREB as it's often called. So that, and along with the conservation code of the state, so that when you're rehabbing a building, you don't have to bring it up full to the full technical code. You can bring it up to safe, decent, good condition, but not necessarily the full code. This would be completely overridden if this law were to pass.
Mr. Ryan, is there anything else you need to get on the record? And I'll be quick.
Mr. Chairman, I am sort of the designated lead testifier.
And
with your indulgence,
which is why I've given you
and
more space to run.
Thank you.
But
thank you.
I think five other people who
okay.
also have some opinions they'd like to get on
okay.
the record.
Two important points that I really do want to stress. First of all, there's no urgency here at all. The Supreme Court case came down a year ago. The bill was introduced literally just a week ago. There has been no testimony. You've heard no testimony whatsoever of harm being done, of people injured, of building code not being able to be enforced, of any bad news at all over a past year. It's just inconceivable that there is some kind of an emergency. No harm has been done, and you've heard no testimony. Morris v. Sachs, contrary again to what has been stated, does not actually change anything. Technically, it's just one appeal of hundreds of years. The city of Morris forced it all the way to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court simply said, we read the law, we agree it says what the legislature clearly said it says, and that's what we decide. I mean, there's nothing mysterious about it. It doesn't essentially change anything. Final point, and this is probably the most important point of all of this. Morris v. Sachs in no way impedes a city's ability to order maintenance, to order that buildings be maintained in a proper way. Vague fears have been blown up into fear and to confusion and misinformation, but it's absolutely not true. In no way does this prevent any maintenance. It creates no confusion. The city of Morris, in the case, the Supreme Court case, tried to make the same argument. And the Supreme Court, after hearing all the evidence, examining the law, briefs, arguments, and so on, came to the conclusion that what you have in your handout material, the last page there, underlined, our decision should not be misconstrued as precluding municipal regulation of rental housing. This is a rental housing case. And then it goes on to cite various laws, including ordering safety, safety of the body. It goes on to say, in addition, municipal rental housing regulations are not prohibited by the state building. Are not prohibited by the state building code if they do not regulate components or systems that are covered by the building code and are not different from provisions of the building code. This bill says we can do something that's different. The Supreme Court, reading the plain language of statute that's been in place for decades, says, well, yeah, that's what it says. We read it. You can't do anything different. And you've got plenty of power. It concludes by saying this leaves many permissible areas of regulation. Mr. Chairman, just finally, final comment. There is no need for this kind of a bill with the chaos that it creates. If it goes into effect, buildings all over the state, all of a sudden, who thought they were in compliance with the building code and are in compliance with the building code, are now not. This click-off, click-on building code just creates huge mischief. Buildings that would now had done what they thought was in compliance with the building code are now subject to orders from the city saying, well, no, now you got to do this because our code is supreme. Rehabbers, you don't know. For this one-year period, what do? Do you build to the building code, which will be the law again in a year, mm-hmm. or to the local ordinances, which is now the law now? Buildings all over the state that will be ordered to do things during this year that exceeds the building code, clearly we're talking hundreds of thousands, maybe even $1 million or more, and these are expensive items often, will be ordered to do work that, when the building code clicks back on, will be shown to be unnecessary, wasteful expenditures because they exceed the building code. Our state building code does not condone unsafe conditions. That's just unthinkable. I mean, it doesn't. This legislature does not condone unsafe conditions. That simply wouldn't happen. But by putting into place this bill, it creates chaos, it creates confusion, it creates expense in return for covering over some vague, unfounded fears that somehow a city can't do maintenance.
Any questions for Mr. Horner? Mr. Horner, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your indulgence.
Mr. Horner laid a broad and elaborate base for the opponents to the bill.
The tech committee members, I just missed this committee so much.
Well,
I just needed to make sure I had at least 30 seconds to get up and say, I'd like to...
Can you identify yourself to the tape?
Some of my frequent flyer miles. Lisa Frenette with the Builders Association of Minnesota. Thank you very much. Mr. Horner has eloquently put everything, laid the groundwork for everything and how we feel about the State Building Code. The Builders Association is slightly proprietary, as many of you well know, over the State Building Code, and we frown on issues that go beyond it at this point in some of the property maintenance codes that some of the cities are currently utilizing. Clearly, through the Supreme Court, the Minnesota Supreme Court decisions do go beyond it. We are all right with an advisory board. We agree with that. We think that it would bring a uniform property maintenance code throughout the state. I do, however, and the Builders Association of Minnesota has given pause to ignoring a Minnesota Supreme Court decision. We believe it sets a bad precedent for the future. We understand the city's problems, but we do not believe that the city should be allowed to be allowed to go beyond the Supreme Court's decision for a year, when they have already had a year to try to fix this. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Ms. Mabenkamp, we've got a frequent flyer on the one hand and a first-time testifier on the other, sitting right next to each other.
Can you hear me now?
In front of this committee.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the committee. Can you hear me fine? Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Heather Mabenkamp for the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and Jack and Lisa have identified several issues that we have as well, so I'll just talk specifically to real estate. So we are in opposition of the first subdivision, but we'd be more than willing to participate in an advisory committee, which is identified in the second division subdivision. Specifically to real estate, we of course support home safety and maintenance, no doubt, but we are deeply concerned with the statutory change that we think will create significant costs to homeowners, especially when sellers are upside down on their mortgage and can't afford these significant improvements. Right now, about 60% of homes are lender mediated, which means not only foreclosed homes, but more specifically, a lot of that percentage is short sales. That people are upside down, they're trying to ask the bank if they can get out of their house for less than they owe. So they're having to sometimes come to the table with checks and requiring them to do some updates to their house that exceed the State Building Code. You know, if they've already been living in the house and it's safe, we feel it's a little too much. Another concern we have is the State Building Code uniformity is for uniformity and commonality and predictable standards, and we think that this bill will create room for abuse, inconsistent standards between localities. It's difficult for homeowners, like I mentioned, and real estate agents to understand what standards apply, which one is superior, and what they need to bring their house up to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mabenkamp. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, we're moving down the list, folks. Bill McGaughy, followed by Jim Smartwood, Leslie Lucht, last name I have on the list currently is Jacob Reichman.
Yes.
All right. Mr. McGaughy, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. I'm Bill McGaughy. I'm from Minneapolis. I've been a rental property owner for about 18 years. My argument has to do with separation of powers. I think most of us can live under laws that are objective, well written. The problem is, on the local level, the interference by elected officials, city council members who are legislators, in the inspection process. If you live in the inner city, you find out that there's an agenda usually to get rid of tenants by using inspections as a punishment tool. I think Minneapolis is a lot better today than it was maybe 10 years ago, but in St. Paul, things are out of control. The problem is, in St. Paul, they've got a fund to redevelop housing controlled by city council members, where they sometimes try to put their key people in. We've had testimony, an affidavit from a woman who lost her home, who said that an inspection supervisor in St. Paul told her that she had to sell her home to a named individual for $40,000, or he'd see to it that it became a hole in the ground. And it did become a hole in the ground. There are three or four people now suing the city of St. Paul for racketeering in real estate. This is going through the federal court. People have lost confidence in government, and where you have a hands-on approach by elected officials, by city council members who make ordinances and direct the inspections department, there's a potential for corruption. I noticed in the paper, I think a St. Paul inspection official said that the Morris decision didn't apply to them. And now they're coming to you to try to get the law changed. There's an above-the-law attitude where there's a concentration of legislative and executive power as there is at the local level. So we, as landlords, would feel more confident in government if there were simply a state law that was well-written and fair and the city stuck to enforcing it and not legislating in specific situations. So that's the way I feel about it in general, that we need fairness. We don't need St. Paul officials being given extra breaks and discretion to do things where they have an incentive to do the wrong thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCoy. Mr. Smartwood?
It's a W, not an M. Fortwood.
Fortwood, I'm sorry. It's just upside down, that's all.
Oh, that's...
Please state your name for the social security with your testimony.
James Fortwood. I'm a publisher of Watchdog News, and I've been a rehabber and landlord for 40 years. And I'm here to say that I think the state code is fine. I don't think we need any changes in it. I think that the cities aren't following the Supreme Court decision of Sachs, Morris Sachs. I mean, they're coming up with ridiculous standards that are impossible. I mean, I've just had a friend of mine and bought a house that was then notified that they had to do a code compliance, and they had to do before they could buy the house. But this had already happened, you know. And then it was right at the time where, right around December, where this new ordinance went into effect. But I mean, the city of St. Paul basically said that they can't buy a house if the city doesn't approve it, doesn't approve the sale. I mean, they've come in and interfered with business here, and then you had to have a code compliance, and you had to have a contractor give you a bid of what was going to be going on, and then you had to prove that you had enough money to do it. I mean, it turned into a nightmare. St. Paul's got over 4,000 vacant buildings. I mean, this is turning into a real crisis. It's going to be a big crisis for the state, too, because they're not going to be getting the taxes. I mean, these guys have got to back off on this, and they've got to abide by the state standards. And, I mean, I think that's an emergency that we've got to address. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Swartwood. I've got Leslie, and I'm going to get it wrong again. Lucht. And then batting last is Jacob Weichman. Mr. Lucht.
My name is Leslie Lucht. I'm a property owner and landlord. I own property in Frogtown. I built two houses in 2003 in Frogtown. I rehabbed four houses. Under the current status of the St. Paul Code Enforcement and Fire Department, they're making mockery of Morris versus Sachs. I've been going through inspections with other landlords that have been certificate of occupancy inspections going on. They have cited building code problems, not maintenance issues, building code issues. Back when the decision came out last year, last May 18th, if I'm correct, May 31st was a city council meeting. I testified for a couple of individuals that had inspections, and they were appealing the decisions of the code enforcement department at that time. The city council president basically blew up and told me that Morris versus Sachs don't apply. And the city attorney told her, yes, it does. But they still, what they did then is switched it over to the fire department, made the fire maintenance regulation, because under the fire safety clause, under the decision, they could do something. So now they're doing inspections for fire and safety, but they're citing building code issues. So whatever they want, they switch it so they can get it. Now, you take a police officer, he's patrolling Frogtown, and then the notorious area, drug dealers, prostitution, gangsters everywhere. If you suspend his rights from policing for a year, it's going to be chaotic. And that's what you're doing. You're going to let the cities do whatever they want, supersede the state law for a year. They're going to tell landlords, eventually homeowners. Last year, there was about 500 homeowners that had their power shut off. They had to bring it up to code. They lost their homes. These are elderly folks on fixed income that lost their homes, had their homes paid for. The city came in, told them you have to do 100% Category 2 upgrade, which means you got to bring it to 2008 code. Supersedes Morris versus Sachs right there. It was in the paper last July and August. The city council president says, well, we need out in the farm. We need lights and stuff. People can't pay their bills. Hey, I mean, why do they have to bring it up to current code? Okay, that's the whole bottom line. The city wants all the houses up to the current code. If they don't get it, condemn it and demo it. And then sell the land so you got more C's on permits. Well, that's what they're doing now. They're switching to building new houses in St. Paul. They want to tear down two houses and put up one house. So they can try to lure in the people from the suburbs. So they get a bigger tax base. That's been on their agenda for years. And I've been sitting on committees since 94. And I've been watching all this stuff going on. And I've been telling people. In 2000, when Mayor Kelly got elected in city council as mayor, Andy Doxies, I think you're all familiar with him. He was a poll director, a buddy of mine. We hit class every time. Him and Kelly are in four federal lawsuits, which is going to the 8th Circuit right now. The thing is, the city knows that their chance is down, and they're trying to get some help from the state. So if you're going to suspend this North versus Sachs, hey, suspend it for drug dealers and prostitutes and everyone else then. Because that's basically what you're doing. You're letting your thieves run the city, and you're letting them steal from the property owners. Our taxes are going to go up, and you're going to have no one in the city left to live there. You've got to bring up the household code, $80,000 to $100,000 to bring it up to current code for a 100-year-old house. Do you got money for that, sir, Mr. Chairman?
Not in my back pocket today, sir.
How about that person on a fixed income, living on a pension, has their house paid off? City comes in and says, hey, you got to bring it up to code. You don't, we're going to condemn it into a vacant building. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson. Mr. Luck? There's a question here from Representative Nelson. Just there.
I know a little bit about construction, seeing as how I spent most of my life in it. You said you built two houses in 2002 and 2003.
2003, yes.
Yeah, you built those up to current core, I believe, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so those houses aren't a problem.
Nope.
You said you remodeled four older homes?
Yep, sir.
Turn on here.
Current code.
Thanks, sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
So Representative Nelson. We're going to try to go through the chair. We're going to try to slow it down.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
The remodeling on those old houses, how extensive was that? Because my understanding of the code is when you remodel above a certain extent, you have to bring it up to current code. Did you bring those remodeled houses up to current code when you did the remodeling?
What I did is I gutted the building and brought it up to current code, yes. That was my intention.
So, Mr. Chair, so I guess to my mind, what you did, Sachs versus Morris, or Morris versus Sachs, wouldn't have...
It didn't really affect me.
It wouldn't have affected either one of these because you would have had to underbuild the current building code, statewide building code, and City of St. Paul ordinances because of the remodeling you did. You would have had to bring them up to current code, the amount of remodeling you did on them. Is that correct?
Mr. Luft. Yes, sir.
So,
Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, what you're saying is this doesn't affect you the way you do your business. The other things that you brought up are, I can understand some of those things, and I don't know all the facts on that, so I guess I'm not going to go into it, but what you're talking about here, what you've had to do, you've had to bring it up to current code, so, again, Morris versus Sachs wouldn't have affected you one bit on what you're doing because you had to bring these up to current code. You wouldn't have been able to leave them at 1902 or 1910 or whatever code was when those buildings you remodeled were built. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. But if I may extend, like I said, I've been on inspections of other landlords which didn't get the buildings out, which has them as a rental, which they have to get a certificate of occupancy through the fire department. Actually, before then, it was the code enforcement. And what they would do is they would cite them under the building code issues. They would, like, I'll give you an example. You got a sagging foundation. they'd say, okay, you're going to have to spend money to fix that Fagan foundation. But if you've got a door under the maintenance program, they got you got one doorknob and no latch lock, but you're going to have to put the latch lock because that's city code, not state code. But now getting to the egress window issue. Now they're citing under the fire issue that I have to bring up an old duplex, which I own right now, and I just got a letter from Section 8 saying that I have to put in new windows for the bedrooms on the first floor, egress windows. The windows are 23 long and 20 wide. The windows I have is 23 wide and 20 long. So it doesn't meet their standard, is what they're telling me. I have to get new windows. But the same square footage is there.
Mr. Luck, this is why the chair remains resolutely not an expert on the state building code. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, Mr. Luck, actually, that's what this bill is trying to get to. I would really like to have, because I, in an earlier life, I was a fire code inspector. And having done way too many building codes up at the Capitol here, I do empathize with Mr. Luck and the landlords, because they are all over the map. And we need a state level, as stated before by a number of people, that they don't mind or they support the advisory committee, council, whatever. But we need to get clarity in these codes for our rental, our landlords, whether they're in the city of St. Paul, or the city of St. Peter, or Halleck. I mean, it's not fair to you fellas, men and women that are providing rental property. So I agree with you. We need to get some clarity between the fire and the municipal codes and the building, state building codes, and that's what this bill is trying to do.
Mr. Look.
Well, but what I'm trying to say is you don't need to suspend the decision. You can work within the decision. If you suspend the decision, the city of St. Paul, I guarantee you, will go hog wild and write up a whole bunch of new codes that will supersede the building codes, and they're going to put out more landlords out of business. I know this for a fact because I watched the city council from 2000 until now. I have been at most of the city council meetings. Every time they try to do some type of code adjustment.
Mr. Lutz, I can give you some comfort. On lines 13 and 14 of the bill, it states that that the ordinances or development agreement needs to be effective before May 15th of 2008. So the city of St. Paul can write up all the new ordinances they wish. It would not be affected by this. They would not be enforceable under this 1 year moratorium. Those ordinances would have need to have been in effect virtually a year ago today.
Now, Mr. Chairman, what about the ones that are already in problem? The next guy that's going to testify, he has a nice story to tell you about inspections.
Well, then let's bring them down. Thank you, Mr. Lutz. Mr. Reichman, if I've got that right. And Mr. Reichman is the last individual who's indicated an interest in testifying. I will ask after he is done if there is anyone else left in the audience who hasn't testified, and I don't think there are many. Mr. Reichman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Jacob Reichman. I own a building in St. Paul. I rent it out as a landlord. I'm asking you that you do not pass this bill. I've had all these problems with these fire inspectors. They come out and, I don't know, they pretend like they're God and say, you know, do this, do that. I do agree that the houses in St. Paul should be safe, but to go beyond that, I mean, you know, do this, do that. For instance, I have some inspectors, Bob Cummings and Pat Fish, fire inspectors, that come out and they say, do this, do this, do this, do this, and I've complied and I've come up and I've done everything they have asked me to do. But every time they come out, they keep coming up with new stuff. Oh, well, I'll do this. Oh, do this. Well, the building that I have is very old. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they can say, well, do this, do that. And you know, they keep coming up with new stuff and say, oh yeah, we're making the city money. No, I don't agree that they should, you know, be, you know, having saying, you know, do this, do that. And, but I am complying, and I just don't see why, you know, they have to keep, you know, putting landlords through hell just to, you know, to make it, you know, right. And it is safe, but I just, you know, don't agree with that. And I don't agree with this bill and Morris versus Slash. I think that's a good thing, and I think we should, you know, keep that in effect.
Thank you, Mr. Eason. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify either for or against House File 2262? Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Mack, would that be Mr. Eason?
Yes.
Mr. Eason? Representative Mack has a question for you. I'm sure he wants the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question of clarification. When you say that these inspectors come out, keep coming out doing new things, how often is that? Is that once a year? Is that they're coming back to check?
Well,
to make sure they fix the last thing?
They've been coming out like every month, or they send a letter and stating, you know, you got to be there or else we'll charge you, you know. If you're there or not, they keep coming out, and they keep coming up with new stuff. So it's, yeah, probably once a month.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be a question for the author of the bill, too, or just a comment, but it seems like, I'm just curious if cities have regulations as far as resources and time well spent of employees of a one-time through doing a proper inspection, finding everything you can, rather than continually dropping by to work on the landlords. That's extra resources of the city. I'm just curious if there's any regulation in that can be answered later, but it's just an interesting point.
I don't know if that was a question for you, Mr. Wickman.
Mr. Chair?
But thank you. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Wickman, them coming out, is that part of your license to do business as a rental property? Is that why they're coming out? And did they come out on an annual inspection and find something wrong, so they have to come back to a subsequent inspection? Is that why they're coming back, or is it something to do with your rental license to rent property in St. Paul?
Mr. Weekman.
The only reason they're coming out is because it's a rental. And when it's a rental, then they come out and say, oh, you bring everything up to code and do this, do that. And, you know, and I'm trying to comply with all this and all that and stuff, but you know, the walls are older, you know, so they keep cracking and stuff, and so they keep saying, you know, paint this and the color of paint, and I do make it look nice, you know, I mud it and make it all look nice, but they keep coming up with new stuff. The only reason they come out is because it's a rental. If it'd be a you know, homeowner, I don't see that they would. But I just don't see why they have to keep coming back and pretending they're God, so to speak.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I know my city, Brooklyn Park, has, because of the vast number of foreclosures and empty houses, and a lot of them are being turned into rental, have instituted a rental license, and they have to be inspected yearly, and that's why I'm asking, did they come out for the yearly inspection and then find other things that needed to be brought up to snuff? And so they're having you come back to make sure that you have brought it up to what they've said, told you had to do. And that was the only reason I asked the question.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, and can you really answer his question? Because my question is, I think they're both asking the same thing, and I'm not sure you've given the answer. Because I just did a rental inspection in the city of Oakdale, and it's an annual inspection. They come out, and it took about... Well, actually, I missed the first one, then I got the death letter, you know, and then...
letter from God?
The letter, you better show up next time or reschedule or we'll send you a... So anyways, it's my dad's property and he's in New Mexico and I'm watching it. But, so we rescheduled, everything went fine and they were in and out. So what are they doing with yours? Did you have violations? That you're,
yeah,
I mean, why are they... I mean... Do you have other property that they in and out with? I'd like their question answered, really, I guess.
Mr. Weekman.
It's just one property that I have. I'd like to get another property, but having so many, you know, so many guidelines in St. Paul. I don't know if I want to get it in St. Paul, but it is the only building I have. But you know, if they were to answer your question, yes, it was once, you know, that they came out once or twice a year, but they never close off on it. They keep coming up with new stuff. And for the people that's trying to comply, you know, or for the other people, rather, the other people that don't comply and do nothing, then, well, yeah, I know it should be, you know, safe, and I'm all for a building being safe. But I'm not for, you know, using their authority, you know, in a way that they should not, and, you know, keep coming up with new things, which is idiotic.
Absolutely.
Well, Mr. Chair, and so then this is more of a comment then for the author of the bill. So certainly I think we all sit around the table here. We want safe properties around the state, and but we don't want municipalities or other folks playing move the ball. You know, that's not right. And then I had read this article in the paper. I'm glad it came up because I had kind of forgotten about it, but it was frustrating for me, and I'm sure you've had a chance to look at it as well, where this person, 74 years old, had put windows in, and then, you know, they were told shortly after again, I mean, that's what was testified earlier, but, you know, to change them. And, you know, to me, that's moving the ball, moving the, you know, changing the rules, and, you know, it's I'm frustrated by that. So I guess the question to the author is, does this bill help that? Does it help that situation? I mean, I know we're doing, you know, or this committee will help, or I guess I'm, you know, coming in late to this a little bit, but does your bill help with that? And then another question was to, and maybe you can answer this, does Dolly, are they for this? I couldn't really tell from their letter where exactly Dolly is, and just if you have a comment on that as well. So, thank you.
Are we done, Mr. Reckman?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. It was one day. Put your hand up.
To the last question first.
Mm-hmm.
The Department of Labor and Industry has worked with me. They're supportive of this, or at least neutral. They believe this is an issue that they need to work on and come to some clarity on. We certainly could call Mr. Joachim down, but he essentially wrote the bill. So I'm going to assume that he is more than happy to work on this and come back as the dates indicate on the bill. And Representative Lilly, your first question?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, does this deal with the moving ball? Is, I don't know how to define that in legalese.
It is a pleasure for the chair to see the city of St. Paul on the hot seat rather than the usual standard of the city of Minneapolis being on the hot seat.
I think it's just the choice of office, Mr. Chair.
Is there an amendment to the ice rink on this?
Let's see the morning.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, I'm trying to behave today, so we'll just let that one slide by. The certificate of occupancy that goes into rental a number of years ago was changed from multi 4 units and above or 3 units and above to single family because of significant problems with some of the rental properties. The moving of the ball, that is absolutely unacceptable, and that's a city issue that the city council, whether it's any municipality in the state, should be able to deal with. I mean, as a building, as a fire inspector, I came into file cases full of just exactly what these people were talking about. In a little over a year, I had it down to a half a drawer full. It is the inspector's issue. The inspector should be able to go through a building and find the one or the 100 things that are wrong on the first trip through, and give a list, and give a reasonable length of time, whether it's 30 days or 180 days, to fix them. I don't think any piece of legislation I can put together or we can put together in this building will deal with that type of personnel personnel problem. But it is a serious problem that not, this is not the first time that I've been made aware of it. And I have mentioned it to my city because that's the only one I really have the cell phone numbers of.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who is just, sure. Given the time, it's 11 minutes to 10. We should, by all means, wrap this up by 10. If we can do it earlier, that would be better. There's been a lot of testimony. If I could limit you sort of 3 minutes, is that sufficient for you to make your point?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Please introduce yourself to the show and proceed.
Yes, my name is Bob Gosman, and I was a private resident in the city of St. Paul who was forced out of my home. And I'd lived on Selby Avenue for 25 years, and I've been involved in key committees to turn around St. Paul's inner city. I was on one committee that was number one priority of the city of St. Paul, another one that was number one priority of Summit University Planning Council. I was a block in charge of a three-block club. And Selby was had just overwhelming problems at one time, and it turned around. We're a model for the nation. And I had been an idea person on these committees. I started some of the main approaches to turn around the inner city. I started the image change. I started the billboard issue. I started the mainstream approach, and I laid the foundations for an annual celebration on Selby. And what happened to me is, first I get a threatening letter from the city of St. Paul threatening felony legal action, and mostly my windows, there was something wrong with the electrical service, and I'd done it properly. The city said I had forged documentation and, with a permit number and a signed by a city inspector, since found the checks that was done properly, and got just a whole pattern of intimidation. The city called my wife and had the health department telling them it had cost $100,000 to fix, and then they said more like $120,000, and the bids came out of $34,000. Then I had to do a code compliance thing that, when I talked to my dad, he was on the Board of Housing Appeals for 9 years, and he talked to his people he knew too, and he said he never saw anything like this, and, but the code compliance was so vaguely written, he said it was the most poorly written inspection report he had ever seen, like something like replace siding as necessary on a 120-year-old house could range from 1 cent to $60,000, and it was just overall intimidation, and I decided I got out of St. Paul. I felt I would be creating a monster because I thought it was out of control. I dealt with all these people named Enrico Lawson, but the city had granted autonomy to our neighborhood to try and get that thing turned around. And, you know, we took a lot of initiative, and we did. Like, the property values went through the roof. We're a model for the nation. And now, I mean, just when they want to come back and say, oh, you know, we're going to apply this black and white thing, it's not that black and white. So there was a lot of understanding. I just felt like I was totally betrayed.
All right. Mr. Gosman, thank you for coming and sharing your story. President Mahoney, you get the last word. You seem to have explored the ongoing tensions between property owners and city inspectors and municipalities and the state on these issues today.
Members, Mr. Chair, the intent of this bill is to bring some clarity to what rental property needs to address in its code system, in the code system. Again, whether it's in the city of Duluth or the city of Austin or the city of East Grand Forks, it's unfair for landlords to have 50 different municipality codes just in the metro area. They should have one that is overarching. So that's what this bill does. As it intent to the setting aside Morris B. Sachs, Mr. Horner talked about chaos. It'll be the same chaos that has been on the books for the last 35 years. It's the same thing they've been doing. I don't want our cities to have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars and hours in city council meetings rewriting municipal codes for a year, and then have us come back and put an overarching code, maintenance code, into effect. I think the other thing, one of the testifiers talked about trying to come to compromise. Yes, they've had a year, and I just got involved, I think, a month or 2 months ago. And I can run a meeting, as the chair understands, and I think people here have seen. I have to tell you, both sides are intransigent. They will not move. And that's why I have brought in, I'm trying to bring in the state building code department as a relatively neutral third party. And if the two parties can't compromise, I'll bring forth the bill that the department brings forth, that is put together by code professionals. As you said, as Mr. Joachim testified to, 30 or 35 years worth of code business. I'm not trying to create chaos. I'm trying to get some clarity. It's a good bill for the 1 year so that we can come back here next year with some clarity and have everyone heard. I hope you'll pass this bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. With that, the Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 2362 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.